This is the 27th of May, 2009. I'm Linda Nelson, and I'm here to interview Carol Fisher for the Faculty of Maritai Association Oral History Project. Hi, Carol.
Hello.
I think we'll start out with asking you what your educational history is.
Well, I graduated from Ohio Wesleyan in 1962. Linda's the one that has the outline here. And there I studied home economics, but also English. And from there I went to NYU and took a master's degree in English Lit. And when I finished that, and by then I was married, we moved here to Michigan State. Oh, no. My husband, 1 year only, temporary appointment. That's the way it was done in those days. And I began a PhD in English, but I just wasn't interested enough in it at that point. So eventually I moved to a master's degree in art history, and from there to an interdisciplinary PhD, realizing that I could do some relatively new research in Islamic art history because of places we were traveling by then.
Yes, I know you from a lot of travel experiences.
That's right, to those places.
How did you get to Turkey in the first place?
Well, it's a very typical story, I think, for someone of my age, and that is that my husband had a research grant to study in the archives in Istanbul. And so that's where we went. He said, let's get married and go to Istanbul, and it sounded like a good thing to do at the time. And that's where I found myself. But I realized there were a lot of things there that had not been researched the way perhaps Renaissance art history or Renaissance English Lit had been done. So that's where I really began. And I was very lucky in those years because a lot of resources were open, and I was able to work with them.
Very good. And so that was before you came to Michigan State?
That was during. During the time. I should add that I was commuting. Part of my graduate was to University of Michigan.
Aha, that other place down the road.
That place down the road, but where you could study, Arabic, and where you could do maybe more specialized thing in that area at that time.
And so you got really into Islamic art.
Yes, yeah, and Byzantine.
Okay.
Islamic and Byzantine Christian art. And I thought at that point that I would quietly go ahead and teach that. That was just my idea. And by the time I finished, I had three small children and decided, they were very interesting years because it was a time that women could do many things and yet couldn't quite do many things, I think. And I would have been able probably to teach more in my specialty if I had chosen to be a commuting wife. And that was a decision to be made. So I ended up staying here and branching out into other areas of history for.
Now, you had some experience at LCC, didn't you?
I taught there from 1976, maybe? Are you getting out of the thing about that time? And I taught there, really, for most of the time that the children were in school. And I did that because I could be down there, begin with an 8 o'clock class, teach straight through, and be home in time for them to come home from school. Those were the years when you were really trying, if you were doing two things,
being... Or more.
Yeah, right. Being a mother.
Very early multitasker.
Yeah. In a way, I was, because I was doing my graduate work commuting to Ann Arbor on alternate days. And but also wanting, really, being very happy to be a mother and have children and whatnot. So LCC was wonderful for those years with that.
And when did you actually start teaching at Michigan State?
That's a convoluted situation because there were times that I took classes for other professors that were on leave. So I would teach for a semester while I was still teaching at LCC. And
you tried all the combinations.
I did. As many, I mean, but I think I'm very typical for women my age, and that's why we really were building our careers. They weren't as straightforward as an equivalent male of that age, or a woman who might have been a single woman at that point. So it was. It was sort of hopping around between.
Now you did things both in the art department and with Kresge.
Yeah. I began at Kresge doing their docent program, and I was, I think they had had one person or one team hired for 1 year before, but actually I was then the first one that held the job of education coordinator at Kresge. I was hired on at first for simply 6 months.
And they liked you.
Well, I hope they did. I liked them.
I've heard very good things from people who studied in your docent training program. Oh,
well, the first, and it was just really wonderful because I was able to begin from scratch. There was no model that you had to go into. I was able to sort of design it. And but the first class I taught, I really expected that would be the class with it, you know, again, in this combination of things. So, and then happily that turned into, thanks to, interestingly, Bill Cederberg, who was then state rep and saw to it through Joe Ishikawa, who was then in his final year or so as director of Kresge Art Museum. He was able to get that position funded. And it was huge at the time to be able to move beyond simply a director and a secretary / administrative assistant to move into that third position. And it was an exciting time for that reason.
That's a great place to be creative.
Yes, yeah. And to pull together so many things, education side, the history of art side, museum studies, which was museum education, was really relatively new at that point. And to be in on sort of those early years when it was the idea that a museum was more than just preservation and exhibition, but the interpretation as well. So I was very lucky from that point of view.
Did you see any similarities or differences between teaching the art courses in the art department and teaching the docent training classes? I'm curious about whether there are differences between teaching the art history classes to the regular students on campus and teaching the docent training, which is to a different audience, a different group.
You know, that is, I think, one of the things that I thought about a lot. And I think, again, my very checkered career was a great help to me, because what I neglected to say also was that I taught, while I was in New York and in graduate school there, I taught at the Calhoun School for Girls. And so I was teaching middle and high school students. I was teaching English. And then with LCC, I had many students who might have been the only one in their family, or the first one in their family, to come to university, I mean to college, to do any kind of advanced education. And so I had to figure out ways to take what was a very esoteric subject and make it just plain old common sense and show them also how to study for it. So I first began, I think, I was able to use that when I realized what the problem was with many Michigan State students. They were really sort of at sea with all of this. I was able to start giving them those pegs that you give to high school students or middle school students or maybe community college students that are new to everything. And that stood me in such good stead at Kresge, because there I had people, often predominantly women, but also men, and often students, too, who chose to be docents, who hadn't necessarily been trained in art history, but felt very threatened coming back into this strange field for themselves, and to make them feel easy, to make them see how to approach it. I really find it was very lucky that I had those early years working on that other level with it. And from that point of view, with the docents, I think, from the point of view, too, as we developed, because this program, as we developed it and as museum education's developed today, is for children and college students, too. It's really a three-pronged kind of thing. So it probably, ironically, helped being a mother of small children at that point, being very in tune with what was public education in East Lansing for those years, and also being situated where I was daily in touch with the Michigan State students.
Most of the docent work is done with school-age children, isn't it? The docents mostly work with the school visitors.
Yes. For a long period of time it was. Then we were able to develop, and as I understand it, since I've left, they've continued to develop it even more with the senior population. Because demographically, we began realizing this was a huge section of the population that we really hadn't thought about, people in general hadn't thought about, hadn't reached. And so we began moving out into senior centers. That was a whole new program during maybe the last 10 years that I worked at Kresge. And spearheaded a lot by docents whose parents might have been, say, at Bertram. And then as these new places have come, not probably new now, but new then, the different senior centers. But interestingly, too, at one point, a team of docents went into one of the newer centers at that time, not realizing it was an Alzheimer's center. And really realized, went ahead, gave their presentation, did their interaction, and realized that this was an important thing, and it's increasingly growing for centers for places like Alzheimer's. Yes, it was mostly for students to begin with, and I would say probably that was always the bread and butter, because that's where we were always able to record numbers, students, community outreach, whatever. But increasingly, I think these other groups are going to be of key importance and interesting, uh-huh, too.
Now, I have gone out with some of your docents when they've gone to some of those senior centers, and it's fascinating to hear the questions and the comments.
Because, of course, we're in a university town, so these are people, as we are, who are slightly older, but nevertheless, with the equivalent training of many, so just as curious and interested in,
What do you think are some of the most creative kinds of things that you did in the docent training? What were some of the things that were most exciting or that got most kind of response from the people who were training to be docents?
That I'm not sure. I know from my point of view often, I enjoyed doing a lot of hands-on demos. For example, if you worked with Renaissance art, how did one develop one-point perspective? And actually working a hands-on project with that. We had one project which we did both with little kids and with seniors and in between, where we would have a sand table and we would bury artifacts, not museum quality artifacts, I hasten to add, in that. And people would do a little archaeological dig and then have to reconstruct a civilization. So they could suddenly realize not only were they reading and learning about Greece or Rome or the ancient Near East, but they were suddenly seeing how the archaeologists had gone about trying to reconstruct those civilizations. Interestingly, I think for the docents in training, often the lectures, or the lectures were very interactive. It was question and answer, dialogue technique. Were the part that it filled something in them. That we, you know, the interest, the thirst still that we all have to learn something new. And there would be readings that would go along with it, written assignments that would go along with it. And it was just interesting to me that would be something that would be just so important to everyone, that the whole series of lectures that always took up the first hour of 45 minutes or an hour of the 3-hour Monday morning trainings.
You did your doctoral degree in interdisciplinary studies, and Michigan State is somewhat famous for having interactive and interdisciplinary kinds of research and so on going on. And I'd be real curious if during the time that you worked with Kresge and with the art department, you had any kinds of connections with some of the other departments, like anthropology or any of the other places that are connected, because obviously art history fits into a lot of other colleges on campus.
Yes, and I was very lucky also in my major professor at the University of Michigan, who saw that very early on and saw the importance now for the whole field of art history. The idea of contextualizing art history is very key, not just memorizing a Raphael, Madonna with the goldfinch or whatever, but really understanding the culture from which it came, the whole milieu, the personal background of the painter, the techniques involved, the media available. And for that reason, I was just lucky in that training. So I was interested, and to my mind, and I'm overusing the word interested, or interesting, but those were the other departments that were the ones that showed the maximum interest in coming in and having us design special projects for them. And it could often be a little more challenging to attract some of the art students. And I found that to be very interesting. I guess probably comparative religions, James Madison, history department, Center for Integrative Studies, the centers were developed during, all of the integrative studies centers were developed at that time. They all made quite heavy use, especially the social sciences and the humanities for that.
I know that since you've retired, you and your husband have continued to do some teaching, and I know you've made some comments about teaching things that are really related to the Middle East, which is very important in our world now. Do you want to make any comments about those?
Well, I think the irony for me was that just as I was beginning to think about retiring, 9/11 happened. And I had really spent a great part of my professional life understanding why I thought Islamic art history, why history that was not connected with Europe, non-Eurocentric history, or non-American art history, why this was so important. But there were times that wasn't, I think, totally heard. in the whole academic community at large, not just Michigan State. And ironically, just as my husband and I both were thinking of retiring, and he was really had his papers in whatever 9/11 occurred, and nothing could have been more relevant. And so since retiring from the museum, this has been the first year that I haven't taught a history of Islamic art and culture. And there has been a tremendous thirst to learn about that. Across the boards, it's been through the Center for Integrative Studies, the IAH 211 class, and I have everyone in there. I mean, all of the different majors are in that class, all different capabilities, and several students always that are have been going through their first, second, or third tours being called back, mostly to Iraq, those have been. And then also, maybe a third of the students have been Middle Eastern kids or Muslim kids, who some of them, I think, probably thought this was going to be an easy class.
It'd be a fun class, but not an easy one with you and Alan.
And it's been, I think, enjoyable for all of us, but very interesting and very touching, I think, to work with, especially in the final several weeks where I've worked with the interrelationships of the East and the West and perceptions, ways of seeing, of looking at things.
Now, do you have anything else you'd like to say about art? Because I want to ask some questions about the English literature part.
They might come to me later.
Until I knew that you had majored in English literature, I didn't know why you were such a good book reader and exchanger. And I want to know if there were any particular kinds of English literature that you were interested in, and then where your interests in literature have gone. Because there's a real tie-in with some of the art things.
That's I'm not quite sure how to answer that. I've just always loved to read. I just can't remember from the time that I learned to read, you know, run, spot run, and run Dick, run Jane, and all those little...
Here I go, up, up, up.
Yes, those little blonde children that were always in those. But I just loved it. It was very comforting, fulfilling, just pleasurable to me to read. I can't even remember questioning that. And I guess I've always just read across the boards too. I remember reading Nancy Drew's. And we were a very non-moneyed academic family that I grew up in. So I can remember my mother helping me take the bus downtown, going with me to a secondhand bookstore and buying Nancy Drew's and Louisa May Alcott's by the, you know, yard, you probably 5 cents a piece or whatever, taking great joy from those. When at NYU, I read especially 19th and 20th century contemporary. And I guess at Wesleyan I did that too. And I always but I also did medieval. So it seemed medieval and very, very 21st century, but then 20th century. Those were areas that I really always was interested in, and the experimental ones. I had been lucky in a good French teacher. So I was able and enjoyed reading in French and liked keeping that up. And it's interesting what your perception is, because I'm not quite, it would be hard for me to really, you know, focus exactly what.
Well, I know that we've read a lot of art mysteries.
Yes.
And a lot of art theft.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, did you ever use literature in your art history classes?
Oh, yes, I did. And always that was because the course title was Islamic Art and Culture. And so the students always had to read, and this really took a lot of them by storm because I'm not sure many of them had done this before. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned that because I just was going by the wayside in my mind. They could choose, and there would be a book from, there would be a selection of maybe 6 or 7 books, each one chosen from a different country, always by Muslim or Jewish or Israeli Jewish authors. So Naguib Mahfouz was one. Amos Oz from Israel was one. And the one that they always loved, of course, was The Kite Runner. And we started that even before it became a community read one. And that, to me, was just thrilling, that they would come in, and kids that you really wondered if they had read anything since Run, Spot, Run, I would say they were at work, and they began reading, and they couldn't put it down. And that was so rewarding to see them, you know, sort of start with something like that. But I picked those especially for their literary credentials, I have to say, not because they were related to art in any way, but viewing the broader spectrum of the arts, which I guess I, and, well, you know, Christy, my middle daughter, who is a great interest in performing arts and has a degree, advanced degree in art history and whatnot, too. We've always seen the interconnectedness of all of those art forms, and that's what I think I wanted them to see. Because at the same time, we were having them listen to music, look at dance from the areas, just try to get a sense of the world through those things, not through awful bombers and the terror of 9/11, I think.
And you and I have both lived in a lot of other places where the arts have a different meaning in the life of the people than they do in the United States.
Yes,
they're not as separated out as we do ours.
No, and very much a part of ceremony, of spirituality, of many, a very deep level in those cultures, too.
Now, you were talking about the kinds of people that were in your class, especially this arts and culture one. Did you find any difference between those who were Muslim or from the Middle East and the standard U.S. citizen in terms of their receptivity or their reaction to some of the things you were teaching?
The most interesting thing I found was the difference between the Middle East or Muslim, let's just say Muslim students, they could be from Detroit, you know. I think they thought often because they were Muslim, there was one, and, you know, of course, we are, that's our problem, too, that we see it in that way. And the ones from Pakistan could see it so differently from the ones from Sri Lanka, perhaps, or Indonesia, which is the largest Muslim population, or from Palestine, the Palestinian kids, from the ones from the much, perhaps more conservative Gulf states, the Saudi kids. And they were startled that they could all, they all saw themselves as this sort of monolithic thing. I think from the point of view of many of the, say, if we're talking of the Western kids, at least the ones that grew up in Michigan of, say, Lutheran backgrounds or Anglican backgrounds or Methodist backgrounds or whatnot. They knew so little. They were willing to learn because so little had been taught. It was very touching, too, because I've had different levels of Jewish kids in there, some that have been very conservative Jewish, Ashkenazi Jews, Sephardic Jews, whatnot. And for them to experience the difference within the Judaic communities and then the similarities to many of the Muslim kids, I think. That whole part was very revealing.
You obviously learned a lot about the students in the class. I'm real curious.
Yes.
What did you do to encourage them to say something about their own background so that everyone in class had some idea where the others were coming from?
Well, and that was, at first, they had to fill out little essays just for me so that I could see what their background was, what they could give to the class. That's what I asked. What could you give to the class from your background? Do you have any languages? Do you have any artifacts at home? Whatnot. Then we did this, the little archaeology project we worked, and in all of those things, they were divided into small groups to work. And I think they never, well, some maybe understood, but they were always divided very carefully into the small groups so that the population, student population, would be mixed within those groups. And perhaps in the group would be a Muslim kid that could read on a coin the Bismillah in Arabic, mixed with a kid from Leelanau Peninsula, maybe mixed with a Jewish kid who suddenly saw those letters look very close to the Hebrew. And so I try never to make them stand up and give a report mm-hmm. on their country, but just allow it to emerge.
To happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like something that we should do more of at Michigan State. We have a reputation for some kinds of things that I don't think always happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but those probably of, I taught other surveys, and as I said, I loved teaching the docents, but I think some of the most touching classes were those post 9/11 with that huge mix, because there were 50 students in a class and they mm-hmm. filled always. That was the irony too, where you didn't have to hunt for students for those after 9/11.
Now, another thing that you've worked on here at Michigan State are the trips that Kresge did, both the national and the international ones. Do you want to say anything at all about that experience?
Oh, that was to my benefit. I have to say, at first, when Susan called me in and said, "Now I'm adding this little thing to your job description," I thought, I really can't do any more in my job description. But when it emerged I was going to do this, I thought, all right, I'm going to look at places I really want to see, too. And I think you'll agree we've been some pretty amazing places.
Yes.
And I think that's one of my other treasures that I came away from that job with, the group that we traveled with. And I think you would agree, because you have been on all of those trips. 14 hours on a bus in the center of Anatolia, going down the Yangtze River, you know, late at night with everyone calling out to each other. Those are just memories you never can forget. And being able to talk about them with very like-minded people, people that were always reading, people that loved the arts, people that loved all of those humanities and arts.
And again,
it was a real treasure.
You mixed in some people, like one of the trips when the Rabins were with us, and he could give us some background on the Jewish places that we visited.
Yes, yeah.
This was
everyone had something. You had things to add. You translated for us at Bilbao. Do you remember when we didn't have a Spanish speaking
things.
We had a Spanish-speaking museum guide, but not an English-speaking guide. And I think that just the way we were all able to share and sit up late at nights or in the bar. I'm not sure I should say that on this, but at the end of a long day, having our glass of wine or whatever, and just talking about what was important, mm-hmm. I think. We've been an awful lot of places, and each one, I think it would be, I thought was the best, and then we would move on to the next.
Well, they were wonderful because they were not canned tours. They were not the ones you would get if you got in touch with a regular tour company.
No.
They were well arranged.
Oh, well, thank you. We worked hard on that, but that was the wonderful thing, I think, that I got from the job, that I was able to really focus and sort of work them up myself, to work with the reading lists and to interview people that had been to those places before, mm-hmm. for the have-to lists, mm-hmm. and things like that. So they were great fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you thought of anything else you'd like to tell us about your tenure here at Michigan State?
Well, I think I'm not sure who else you're going to interview, but right now I would say that I am one worth interviewing for exactly the reasons that I said before, that I'm a woman in my late 60s, so I was very cutting edge of the women's a watershed time for the women's movement. And
you weren't in either home economics or nursing.
No. No, not in those. But that's what my father always wanted me to be, either a nurse or a teacher or home ec. But to be able suddenly, which my daughters just take for granted now, that you could move out easily into a PhD, you could move with a family and do that too. You could move back into graduate work. When I began my master's degree at Michigan State, I was mid-30s. Now, that was very old to begin a master's degree here. At most of the master's degrees you just went straight. That's sort of one thing you did if you didn't get married or think of something else to do, you know? And there were two of us that year. Out of my graduating class from Ohio Wesleyan, I never thought about it, but it transpired that I'm the only woman with a PhD. And I just didn't think about it while it was all happening. So there were very watershed years for women. And there were still, and I think you would agree too, tremendous glass ceilings. Mm-hmm. I mean, in two different cases, in two different jobs, I was told that I really didn't need the raise because, A, either a man with a family needed it more, although I was at that point the breadwinner, or else someone younger, or, you know, whatever. It was a very interesting time. And for women, and I think it has been an amazing time, that you could sort of, I feel very lucky that I was able to have my cake and eat it too, that I could have a family, have children, and yet have a career. And I'm not sure either, probably at each point, different things could have been done in a deeper way, but I don't feel probably any. It was very rich for my mind in the way it was done.
Well, and you were also able to do a lot of publishing.
Yeah, but it was a new time, mm-hmm. I think, for women. And it's so interesting, and I think you would agree too, to watch my daughters now, both with advanced degrees, never having thought that that's especially an issue to be able to have that, you know. And you just want to be able to just to, well, it's wonderful to see how far it has come with that. And not to have to defend a woman who is working, a mother but who is working.
I'm just enough older than you than I had either to get married or to have the career.
That's
I did
right.
not have the
no,
chance at
no,
both.
No. I think that's why I mentioned
right
my
on.
Age
yes.
with this, yep. because I think that's probably the first time. And there were several times that just the night that I turned my dissertation in, and my husband and I had stayed up all night retyping. I was also on the cusp of the computer age too, where you couldn't just erase, you had to. I was told by someone, well, they were glad I was doing this, but the really important thing was to be a mother. And I thought, but wait, I am a mother too. I love this. So it was, I think from that viewpoint, it's been a very interesting time. Mm-hmm. Aside from any field of study in particular, and a good time for mm-hmm. women, I think, with that.
Oh, and I'm glad you did something with arts and humanities, because that's one of the things that I don't think is made popular enough in the United States. I mean, we do pop culture in terms of comic books or horror movies, but the depth of the kinds of things for understanding other cultures that you have done, I don't think is a very common kind of thing in this country.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
And finished.
Very
good.